Does this line of reasoning, and do these arguments of limitation which came from Job, sound familiar? Have these insidious suggestions knocked at the door for entrance to your consciousness? And did they find entrance? How thoroughly they take possession of us and hypnotize us into accepting them as facts and into believing them to be our very thoughts. Here and now, it is our need to annihilate them and replace them with the divine fact of God's infinite love, which is ever at hand to meet our every need. To the extent that we concede power to error, we deny God and His omnipotence. The spiritual consciousness accepts the unalterable fact that now are we the sons of God, and the further fact of God's promise, quote, "Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine," close quote. Do we believe it and endeavor to prove it, to make it practical? The affliction of the righteous and the prosperity of the wicked in a material way, Job accepted as true in his case, and he felt he had a right to justify himself before God, which he did. Then the light of spiritual unfoldment dawned in his consciousness, and he saw that afflictions and trials are not of God, and that they frequently serve as corrections, forcing us to turn from material beliefs to spiritual facts. Therefore, they might come to righteous, sincere men, purging them from much selfishness and materiality, and forcing them to a greater sense of receptivity and spirituality. The law of God is always operating to help and protect us. But this law would not keep Job from the experience he needed. The sense of human goodness and a personal sense of good and evil had to be eliminated. Like Job, we may seem to have trials and afflictions, loss and lack to meet, but it is not necessary to suffer. Quote, "Either here or hereafter, suffering or science must destroy all illusions regarding life and mind and regenerate material sense and self." Close quote. Let us choose the science of right thinking and knowing. Realize our true selfhood and our divine heritage as God's children. We need to look up to spirit, not down to matter or material nonsense. The dream of physical sense, material birth, and material death is unreal. We must prove it to be so. The time has come when we must keep the commandment, quote, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," close quote. No other power, no other intelligence, no matter, eased or diseased, no sick matter or healthy matter. There is no matter. Remember, there is a divine power ever available to you at all times. It is greater than any human belief of power, bigger than any person, organization, or problem, superior to any organization of human will or political aims or claims, superior to any circumstance or combination of circumstances. This power is the law of God, the law of love, the law of divine principle. It is not necessary to go anywhere to find this law, for it is ever present. You need not wait, for it is ever operative for you and always available. In science, you realize there would be no creator if there were no creation, and vice versa. The divine mind would not be mind if there were no ideas, no expression. God would not be God if there were no manifestation, no father, mother, no children. Cause implies effect. Spirit implies spirituality. Truth implies truthfulness. Love implies loveliness. Life implies living. You cannot have one without the other. The word creator, as generally used, is often misleading. It infers that all existing things are apart and unlike their creator, instead of being in oneness and sameness with him. The word creator might imply that there was a time when things did not exist, and later, a time when things were brought into existence. There never was a time when there was no creator, and there never was a time when the creator was not expressed by his creation. There never was a time when the infinite was less than infinite, less than eternally finished. The one great creator, God, mind, consciousness, has ever existed and ever expressed himself in perfection and harmony as man and the universe. Let us consider subjective and objective. Subjective, generated within, inborn. Objective, acquired, not natural, pertaining to an object, outwardly external. Webster gives the definition of subjective as, quote, in the philosophy of the mind, characteristic of or belonging to reality, subject, the ego, close quote. And objective as, quote, what belongs to the object of thought, the non-ego, containing in or having the nature or status of an object opposed to subjective. Close quote. The statement of Jesus, quote, the kingdom of God cometh not with observation, objective. The kingdom of God is within you, subjective, close quote, was his way of saying that being is subjective. Since there is but one mind, which is all, there can be but one being. You are subjective. In her message to the Mother Church for 1901, our leader writes, quote, the Christian Scientist is alone with his own being and with the reality of things. Close quote. Man's real being is, therefore, purely subjective and includes the reality of things. There is no virtue in the use of technical terms unless thereby a clear-cut, distinctive purpose is attained. Mrs. Eddy's use of the words subjective and objective enables us to differentiate more clearly between the real and the unreal, the true and the false. Quote, St. John's corporeal sense of the heavens and earth had vanished, and in place of the false sense was the spiritual sense, the subjective state by which he could see the new heaven and new earth, which involved the spiritual idea and consciousness of reality. Close quote. Ideas do not exist objectively in what is called space, but they exist subjectively in what is known as consciousness, and man possesses these ideas by reflection. There is no need to be afraid for your loved one, whether he is on the sea, in the air, or in an automobile, if you understand that he is God's spiritual idea. He is not in some distant place or space. That is the objective sense of him. He is in mind, forever present, constituting an indispensable, indestructible, and ever-present element of your spiritual being or consciousness. He himself lives subjectively, and every idea in the universe is actually blessing him. God must maintain man in his image and likeness, else his creation would cease to be perfect, and man would cease to be his image and likeness. We earnestly repeat, quote, "All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all," close quote. And then allow ourselves to personalize or materialize mind's infinite ideas. This appearance, which we call person, is in reality always the very presence of mind, or you and I would see nothing. Must always be a communion with God, with our mind. We come into at-one-ment with our God as we recognize that the appearance of all strife and discord is just another opportunity to prove its nothingness and to express God, or to be the at-one-ment with Him. You and I could not see the Christ without Jesus, that is, unless it were manifested for our understanding. We cannot see power unless it is manifested by somebody or something, and then it is power we see, not the something or somebody. The God we know will appear in some understandable form, in health, happiness, completeness. In the resurrection and crucifixion, the people saw the continuity of life, and they called it resurrection. They could not have seen it unless Jesus had manifested it. It was the continuity of life that they really saw. This is what we must strive to attain. By constantly seeing the continuity of life, Jesus released Lazarus from the grave when, to human sense, he had been dead 4 days.